So, you know, the idea is that we're going to be a 10X, a 20X, and that what we have is we have retired people from the uranium ecosystem, engineers, geologists, kind of the old timers are in this deal, and they're all in chat rooms, and they just, you know, they know each other and they spread the word. We're kind of a unique company. We have our cap table is funds, experienced uranium investors.
Thomas Lamb, Myriad Uranium, good afternoon to you. How are you?
You too. I'm fine. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing really well. It's an interesting time, I think, and a really good time to be looking at uranium companies, which is exactly what I am doing. I want to talk about your company and what makes you different and all of that, but let's first talk about just the marketplace of uranium. We had this... it was a slow bleed, if you would. We had a great run up, then a slow bleed downward for probably nine months or so. Is quite painful for a lot of people. Then we had a good bounce in the springtime. I was fortunate enough. We bought into a lot of pain. My small fund and I bought into a lot of pain. We had a good run, just a bounce in uranium, which not only spot went up, but a lot of the juniors went up. Talk to me about what happened and where are we going in the market?
Well, I guess your viewers are probably fairly sophisticated, although you may, for those of you who don't follow uranium closely, the price of uranium, there are two prices for uranium broadly. One is the spot price. That's where you can buy and sell uranium today, right now. And then there's the long-term contracting price. That's the price at which, you know, if you have a mine and you're selling your forward selling your future production for the next 5 or 10 years, you can contract to sell it. And those are two different things. The long-term contracting price has been fairly opaque historically. It's hard to figure out exactly what firms are selling their uranium at, has been. It's getting easier. Everybody's sort of trying to figure that out, and so now it's better understood. Those prices diverged a lot over the, you know, starting 3 years ago. Say the uranium price was $30 a pound. Well, both the long-term contracting price and the spot price started to move up, but the spot price moved up a lot higher than the long-term contracting price. Whereas the long-term contracting price is thought to go up to around $80 a pound. Spot price went up to $105, $106 a pound. A few different things were at work. There's the funds that came in, physical uranium funds, but there's private equity, public equity, you know, there's better understanding of what was actually going on in the background. Future, like projected supply demand imbalance and that sort of thing. You had Sachin Cove come in, smart people out of the East Coast US start telling everybody, hey, this is a big problem looming. So spot raced up. Why it settled back down, you know, it's been a topic of conversation. You know, I think it really just raced up. The spot market is very strange. Just a few participants, occasionally.
Look like.
Yeah. And, you know, often it's just the same five or six people trading it between themselves. So it's a bit convenient for people in the uranium space, like management teams, et cetera, to say, no, don't look at the spot, look at the long-term contracting price. That's what we should be focused on. And that has just been going up with very few exceptions for the last 3 years, every month going up a little bit, and it is not going down. And that is what, I mean, that is what really drives the sector, you know, the economics of the sector. Whereas the spot price, you know, dances around for a variety of reasons. Occasionally somebody comes out from left field and trades in it, but it's usually the same people. That's a little bit about spot and, you know, long-term contracting price. You can get into as many details as you like, but
that's a great answer. Answer. I'll talk to my listeners and viewers right here. That should be I would say an indicator, but don't use that as a hardcore indicator. But indicator when that when you reach an extreme in uranium price, it could be a for traders out there, it could be, hey, there's a time to sell because it's at an extreme, if you would, because the spot price is so illiquid, as you mentioned, Thomas. Or if it goes to the other extreme, which we just happened, again, about 3 months ago, I want to say March, it was around the bottom. It shouldn't be there. It just shouldn't be there. And if you compare it to the long-term contracts, if you would, it's completely out of whack. So in, for traders, a great entry point, but also for investors, that's really when the time, and even now, that is like a generational time to load up the truck and start buying. But I'd also argue that's even a good time now to really start looking at really good companies. So that leads us, Thomas, tell us about Myriad. Give us uranium. Tell us about the story. Give us a 30,000-foot view.
Will, do you mind if I just mention, there are analysts that are saying spot is going to go to 100, so it's at currently at whatever, $72 a pound, that are saying it's going to be at $135 a pound and beyond soon, spot will. And this is because of what they see coming in terms of the forces, supply-demand forces that are going to be brought to bear soon. So people are going to have to be coming in and buying in spot, should drive it up. Suggest people look at that. It's interesting.
I would agree. It is. And I would agree with that, what you said. I would say if it's not an argument, but my only caveat, if you see such a run up in either direction, especially at a downward move, that's typically an opportunity to start accumulating. Yep. Okay. I see uranium is a small part of our portfolio. We're looking to add more to it, depending on where we see deep value or good value in the market, and that is with companies. So let's talk about Myriad Uranium.
Sure.
It's a 30,000-foot view about the company and then about the projects.
Great. So the company is a CSE-listed company that is also trading on the OTC in Frankfurt. We have a market cap of about 20 million Canadian. Maybe it's a little higher than that now. It is an interesting company because it has big assets in a little company. This is because a couple of years ago, when we signed the option to acquire our first project, the main project, which is in Wyoming, called Copper Mountain, neither we nor the optionor, nor the other side of our deal, understood the project fully. We didn't realize, we knew it was a brownfield project, an old uranium producer from the Cold War, 1950s, 60s. We didn't have any data. We didn't, the 43-101 on the project said, this is a past producer, but you need to go find data. Otherwise, you're going to have to start a maiden drill program. We know there's uranium there. You're going to have to start a maiden drill program to figure out what's there. And that's what both sides knew about this project. So it went into this little CSE company. It's a whole background there. But during the 30-day due diligence phase, after we signed the project, both sides discovered Copper Mountain's a really big project with a huge amount of investment, and I'll get into all that. And we thought, oh, geez, if you were objective and sitting outside, you would have put this project into a big SPAC or something. This is like a big public shell in the US, 50 million or 100 million in the treasury or something, and you would have advanced it from there. Too late. Or it was going in the CSE company. We weren't going to let it go on our side. We're grateful to the other side of the deal, not resist bending it to us or optioning it to us when both sides realized what it is. So we're a very interesting little company, relatively small company with a shareholder base that understands the asset and sees us getting a big multiple. So, the idea is that we're going to be a 10x, a 20x, and that what we have is we have retired people from the uranium ecosystem, engineers, geologists, kind of the old timers are in this deal, and they're all in chat rooms, and they just, they know each other and they spread the word. We're kind of a unique company. We have, our cap table is funds, experienced uranium investors, this ecosystem of people who understand uranium. They know that we have the goods. We happen to have put this project into a small company. So that's Myriad Uranium. It's run by very experienced mining people. We've all built companies. I've built companies from scratch. literally cocktail napkin to significant exits and beyond. And we know how to do this. This is now we're all excited. I became the CEO. I know I'm jumping around a bit, but I became CEO of this company initially as a consultant. I was helping them with their West Central Africa projects in Niger. I speak French. I know Africa extremely well. Spent 10 years living and working there, mostly in East Africa. And I was asked to come in and help Myriad with its Niger uranium projects. Our assets were next to DASA. People know uranium well. They'll know Global Atomics DASA project is the outstanding development stage uranium asset globally right now. We were right next to that, and Imerara, the world's second largest uranium deposit. We were right next to that in Niger, but there was a military coup. Anyway, I was a consultant. I became CEO to help with that. Specifically, there was a coup. We pivoted to this project in Wyoming. That's how we ended up in Wyoming. There's a coup. We're leaving Africa behind. Wyoming, we get this project. We realize it's a superstar, amazing project, and everybody's blown away. So now I'm staying as CEO. You know, maybe I would have gone on to other things, typically sure. Do some other things. And here we are. Well, we have an outstanding technical team. And then we have a second project in New Mexico that I can talk about, which is very nice. High grade near surface sandstone.
Well, let's talk about the asset specifically and Wyoming. Why is it so special? And really start again, higher level, than break it down for me. And that's what I think most people are going to be interested in.
Project in Wyoming is in the center of Wyoming near a town called Riverton, which has an airstrip or in fact, it gets United flights a couple times a day. Access is excellent. Project is called Copper Mountain. It's called the Copper Mountain Uranium Project. It was a past producer in 1950s. It produced 500,000 pounds at 0.15. And then there's another mine called Bonanza that produced 780,000 pounds at 1.3%. Union Pacific Railway, their subsidiary at Rocky Mountain Energy, we just say Union Pacific Railway, came in the 1970s in partnership with California Edison. And they knew this was going to be a big project. They invested $78 million U.S. in today's dollars, or 2024 dollars. They drilled 2,000 boreholes and they found 7 uranium deposits. Really, it's in a relatively small area, kind of like 5 miles by 3 miles. 7 uranium deposits and then lots of prospects. They decided that they were going to build a 6-pit mine that was with a starter resource of 15 to 30 million pounds. Conventional uranium mine, and this was going to fuel the Edison reactor fleet planned for California in the 1980s. So up until 1979, they were very active in our project. 2,000 boreholes, 7 deposits, 13 prospects, and they were going to start with a 15 to 30 million pound resource. However, the Three Mile Island incident occurred in 1979, that shut down the U.S. uranium sector effectively. Everybody went home. Our project just sat there. Anaconda came along in 1996, 97, did some additional work. They stepped in when uranium was moving up in 1996, but the uranium price dropped and they left. 2006 to 2012, our Copper Mountain project was owned by Neutron, half Neutron and half Strathmore. Strathmore being a predecessor to the current Strathmore and that fission uranium F3, et cetera. But they kind of had a checkerboard ownership of the project. They couldn't consolidate in time, but they were very excited about it. Again, 15 to 30 million pound resource for the conventional uranium mine. But in 1979, Union Pacific estimated the potential of the project at over 65 million pounds. 4 years later, U.S. Department of Energy estimated 200 million pounds. That's huge. That would be the biggest project in the U.S. maybe.
All right. What's your
2006, 2012, Neutron, in their internal management document, said we have to consolidate ownership. The potential here is several hundred million pounds.
You're probably sitting on the largest deposit in the U.S., if not the world, right?
We could be one of the big ones. one of the big ones. Yeah.
So talk to me about grade. What kind of grade do you get? Are you getting similar to Athabascan
region? No, this is low grade, especially relative to Athabasca. It's a different deposit type. Athabasca.
Probably another question.
Yeah, I mean, nowhere is this like that, right? So we are closer to, so if you look in Namibia, the large scale mines, what was it, Langer Heinrich, and there are a few other sort of more hard rock conventional mines there. You see grades in the 200 PPM range. You'll get 200 million pounds at 200 PPM. So it's very low grade. However, it's economic and you're seeing big market caps on these.
Yeah, that's where I guess the play would be. It's economic and you said it's on the ground or near ground, near surface, correct?
So whereas at Athabasca, you're getting really high grade, but you have to go deep. It's very remote. You've got to go very deep. You got to build mines deep underground and then you have to freeze the ground in order to mine it. It's extremely expensive and you need robots to mine it. So that you can't have humans down there because the grades are too high and the grades radon gas and all this type of stuff. So now there are some big advantages to having these lower grade deposits, conventional Bell or Southern Hathor project, sandstone and probably ISR. But, and we may be ISR in the Northern Hathor project too, which is where the mine was going to be. So the grades, 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 PPM.
Got it.
Depending on cutoffs and where you focus and that sort of thing. However, the very exciting transformative news that we've only discovered after all these decades, we did chemical assays of our drilling a few months ago. And those assays have revealed that all the thinking about the project was wrong. It turns out that due to a phenomenon called disequilibrium, which your people can look up or I can explain, the grades are higher than anybody thought. So what you do often in uranium exploration is you drill holes and then you put a probe down, which is a bit like a Geiger counter for those of you who are not uranium people, but it's a gamma probe and it detects neutron emission from uranium. And then the daughter products of uranium, because uranium decays into daughter products and then ultimately lead and what, you know, et cetera. And at a rate that's well understood. And, you know, the ratios of the daughter products well understood. So what you can do is you put a probe down and you can estimate what they call an equivalent grade of uranium. That's what they did in the 1970s. That's what they've done since. That's what everybody does. There's one technology called a prompt fission neutron probe, PFN probe, that you can use to actually just pinpoint the uranium emission, but nobody has access to that except for a small group of people. So what they did in the 1970s and what we did in October, November of last year is we used the regular gamma probe and it cannot detect some of the uranium at our project. This means that disequilibrium favors us. In the 1970s, when they estimated the resources at Copper Mountain and when they put together their mine plan, formulated their mine plan, they did not know that there's all this other uranium, additional uranium.
That's why you guys think much. Yeah.
That's why we think this is even more exciting before. So, you know, we have preliminary confirmation of this phenomenon. We're currently sending 1,500. Almost 1,500 additional samples to the lab for chemical assay right now that will really confirm what's going on. And this disequilibrium, I'll just mention for your viewers, as uranium is picked up and transported by, for example, water and then deposited where there's decaying plant matter or something like that, it drops out. And then it starts to decay at this known rate. Well, if water or something else comes and picks up either the uranium selectively or the daughter products selectively and leaves behind uranium or takes the uranium away, but leaves the daughter products, then you're still going to get neutron emission, but it's going to deceive the probe. into thinking that there's either lots of uranium or not much, or, you know, the wrong amount of uranium. Well, that phenomenon seems to favor us at our project. In the 1970s, Union Pacific was aware that this might be a thing, but they used a very conservative approach. It was expensive to assay back then. They didn't do much of it. They used fluorimetric methods to also understand the grade there, and those gave much higher grades too, but they didn't rely on that. They were confused by it. We have their general manager in the 1970s is on our advisory board. His name's Jim Davis. And he told us we knew the statistical equilibrium issue was, you know, it's confusing to us. The parametric methods showed much higher grades, but we did not go down that path. We relied on the conservative probe grades for our planning. And so he told us you might get significantly higher grades. There's a lot of surprises at Copper Mountain. And lo and behold, here we are.
Here we are.
Okay, let's talk about where are you at in the Lassonde curve or in the process here. And do you have, really what I want to know, it sounds like you have a great infrastructure, easily access to rail power, correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, we'll check that box. But yeah, do you have a mining permit, or how long does that take? And is Wyoming, and I know the answer, but I'm going to ask this anyways.
Yep.
Is Wyoming very friendly to uranium, or just mining in general? Tell me about the jurisdiction, and yeah, just tell me where you're at.
So Wyoming just permitted an open pit gold mine. If you understand mining in the U.S., that's very important. CK Gold just got their gold mine permitted, open cast. Wyoming is very friendly, and they have a new government in there that is extremely friendly to uranium and mining generally. I just got an email from several senior people there in government. They said, how can we help? We want to advance your project. Federal government, of course, you've got the executive orders that are pushing down on all the regulators across the U.S., you know, any key minerals, you know, approve permits subject to, you know, key issues, and do it fast. Let's go. So you have the federal government is very positive and is supportive. The state government in Wyoming is excellent and has suddenly even already good has jumped up. Wyoming is the number one state in the U.S. for uranium. You have a lot of active uranium projects. It's the big producer of uranium in the U.S. right now. And then you've got the up and coming projects in Wyoming too. So Wyoming is the place. It's number one, very friendly to uranium. We are only a few miles from a highway. We're a few miles from a rail line. We're a few miles from power, high tension power. So we're in a great spot. And it's brownfield. Our project's already brownfield. It's got several, you know, old mines on it, right in the center of our project. So the community around us is very supportive.
Okay. So walk me really through, and then I'd like to talk about share structure and money that you have in the bank. Walk me through the process now from now until the end of the year, and really what the goal of yours is and the company is over the next really 12 months.
So to your question, we do not have a mine plan or a mine permit. We are just at the exploration stage, but we're a very exciting spot if you're in this business and you've built companies where we know.
Let me interrupt you. So to all my viewers and listeners, I evaluate a lot of different things of what I want to look at, but as far as stages and the Lassonde curve, I like very early myself, or I like very late, or I like, if it's in the middle, I really want to see really deep value and potential catalysts that will make it, if you would, going into a later stage. Thomas, you're telling me that you're very early stage, correct?
So yeah, we are, and this is why we get these investors that we have in here, and that I've got about 600,000 of my own money out of my own checking account in this deal. I invest in every private placement. All my money is in at 20 to 46 cents. Myself and my colleagues and our investors, we believe we're at just the right spot in the Lassonde curve, where we have a really low market cap relative to our value. So we have a huge amount of uranium in the ground. This is based on 2000 boreholes. So what you're talking about is your early stage exploration, and a company hits one of its, it's got a fairly small market cap. It drills a discovery hole and the market cap really jumps. That's very exciting. They've discovered some uranium, for example, in the uranium sector, but they have a lot more money to raise and a lot of drilling to come. And that, the market cap's going to fluctuate. Hopefully it goes straight up. What we've got is we have this low market cap because we started at a very low market cap when we got into this project, not realizing that 78 million US has already been spent on it and 2000 boreholes and deposits already identified and a mine plan already conceived. But yet we have this luxury. We get to just continue to verify the historical work and make new discoveries at our project.
Right.
Union never drilled deeper than 175 meters or around 600 feet. Very few exceptions, maybe a couple holes out of the 2000. We've drilled a bit deeper, including one quite deep hole, and we have found much deeper mineralization. It is very exciting. So that would be something that if it was our very first hole, there'd never been any drilling at our project and we hit that, you would be everybody super, super jazzed, very excited. So we're at this very interesting stage. So what we have is we have a 50 hole permit. We have 50 holes remaining on our first drill permit. And that's called a drilling notification. It's a small permit just filed for a plan of operations to expand that to 70 holes. And we're in the phase we are still early stage exploration drilling according to the categories, but underneath is known uranium mineralization.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the perfect combination.
Yeah. You're very different because, again, I do invest in greenfield projects. They have no idea what they're doing. I mean, they have no idea what they're doing. They have an idea what they have, but they have nothing verified, which you guys have. Yeah. And you still have a very small market cap. So it's still very relatively early. To walk me through to the end of the year, and then let's talk about share structure.
Great.
What do you have catalysts coming up from now until December?
So if it weren't for the fact that we've discovered this disequilibrium issue where it turns out there's a lot more uranium than anybody thought, we would be already jumping ahead to probably drilling some additional boreholes over the next few months and continuing to verify the historic work and also drilling some. We have a good idea where to drill to get some really great intercepts. I'll just cut straight to that. We have a fair amount of historical data. We would like to drill some very exciting holes that everybody will respond to, and they'll go, oh, this project has a lot of great uranium. Look at this intercept, bring it alive for people. And it also verifies the historic work, which is important for the 43-101. This is the regulators, et cetera. They want to have current information. However, we did chemical assays on the drilling that the intercepts that we encountered in our 2024 drilling, where we drilled 34 holes. We sent those to the lab. Anything with 1,000 ppm parts per million or 0.1% uranium or higher has come back on average 60% higher. There's 60% more uranium on average than anybody thought. 60% more than we thought last November, December, 60% more than they thought in the 1970s, et cetera. Whoa. On top of that, some of the areas, because what we did is we assayed a little bit of assayed a bit extra where there was no uranium grade, according to the probe. We assayed some of those and that came back with uranium. So it looks like there's a fair amount of uranium that's invisible to the probe. Make a long story short, there's uranium that's invisible to the probe. What do you do with that? We are now sending nearly 1,500 samples from our drilling to the laboratory. Some of it's already in the lab, some of it's just sort of being finalized and sent to the lab. Over the next several weeks to, month and a half, we're going to start getting all that information back. That is going to potentially transform the project. There's reasons to be quite optimistic that we're going to get the results we hope, which is more uranium, That'll change the grade shells, because in the subsurface, we make 3D models of where the uranium sits. If there's all this new uranium that was not previously captured, that changes all the economics, that changes the resources, that changes, it turns out there's just a lot more uranium there. So we're evolving our plans for the rest of the year, and we have to wait to see what the results are, then we can make the next plan.
Got it. So really, investors and potential investors really need to be paying attention to you over the next several weeks, really starting now until really going through
September,
August, September. Okay. Let's talk about the share structuring cash you have on hand. Off camera, you just raised some money, but how much cash do you have in the bank? Do you have enough money to push the plan forward here through the end of the year?
So we do have enough money. I have long experience in the mineral sector. I'd like to keep the bank balance above a certain threshold, so you're never under pressure to raise money. We have last week 3.2 million Canadian in working capital. That's what we news released. So that's what I can speak to. We don't spend very much money. Our monthly burn is about 65,000 core burn. We'll spend more money on top of that for some geophysics, surface work, and then any drilling we do will be over and above that monthly burn. So how many holes are we going to drill this fall, for example? It's going to be anywhere from 0 to 15, 20, 30 holes, depending on what's happening in the market, depending on what's happening with, because we need to get rewarded for the drilling. You understand this. If the market's not rewarding drilling, we're not going to raise money and put it in the ground only to have nobody listen. We can always delay the drilling. However, the market's reasonably good, then, you know, we'll see what we do. So an example of a current plan is we drill 8 to 12 holes. The budget for that would be 1.2 million, just to suggest a number.
Wow. So
that's
really,
US. Yeah.
So you're well financed then.
We're fine. And we keep things very tight. We pride ourselves on being the lowest paid, hopefully the best management, one of the better management teams around. We're certainly in the bottom quartile in terms of cash compensation for management. We keep things very lean, but we have equity comp. Equity comp is our focus. Also, we're all big shareholders. I'm the second largest shareholder on the Noble list.
Well, how many shares do you have outstanding?
Fully diluted. Fully diluted, about 100 million.
You're really tight.
Yeah, we are very tight. Yeah.
Okay. And where are the options and warrants written at? What strikes?
So the warrants are, 90% of the warrants are at 35 to 50 cents.
So they're well out of the money.
Yeah.
Got it.
Options, we have very few options that are at 20 cents that remain, but I would say 5% of our options are there, and almost all the stock options are up in the 30 to 40, 46 cent range.
Well out of the money. It's music to my ears. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. What do you want to tell investors or potential investors here? What do they need to be aware of? Again, you just gave them a lot of stuff to be aware of, but what's the fun you want to give up? You would want to tell investors here?
Yeah. Okay. There's an analyst, from East Coast US, who I don't know that I can attribute this to him directly, but he calls us the call option on the uranium space in the US. He thinks that we are the call option in the uranium space because we have this foundation of big resources. New Mexico Project has 500,000 pounds of indicated and 1.5 to 6.5 of inferred. This is historic, not current under 43-101. I'm supposed to say that for the regulators. And then our Wyoming project has a really big core resource, historical, with big upside. So the uranium is there with big upside. So that is why somebody's going to come for it. The uranium is there. And the US does not have a lot of these projects. It's potentially unique projects. So huge fork in our company, and that's why we have this great cap table.
All right. Thomas, and well, before I ask this, I just want to tell all of my listeners and viewers, I and my fund, Small Fund, is not an investor as of yet. That might be changing here over the next few weeks. Just as a disclaimer, Thomas, where do people find you online and give me your ticker symbols and the exchanges that you're traded on?
Excellent. Yeah. Our website is myriaduranium.com. Our symbol on the CSE is M. Our symbol on Frankfurt is C3Q. And our symbol on the OTC is Myruf, M-Y-R-U-F. Please take a look at us and, follow us, follow along. I think you're going to see our team has built companies from scratch and exited. And we've, for example, our chairman, Simon Clark, and I, we built, along with a couple partners, a company called M2 Cobalt, which we then sold to an offshoot of Glencore, the nickel cobalt division. And we were part of management there as that went up to from, tens of millions to 100 million to 1.3 billion. Cobalt has since fallen off. But this is what we do. We're going to try to do that here. And so we've done it before. We're experienced people and we invest in our own deals. And we're very excited about this. So we think this is a very good one.
Excellent. All right. Thomas, looking forward to following you. I'll put everything in that you mentioned in the show notes, both on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. It's great learning about the project, and I will be following along. Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks, Andy. All the best. Thank you.